So we are now continuing our Summer of Faith tour to where we come to Abraham. And yes, I've done an order. I may not always do an order every week, but I just want to reiterate a couple things from last week. I shared this perspective when talking about trust or faith. Our faith is revealed through the framework of culture. We do not truly know what we can endure unless it is tested. It is tested by the time and the culture we reside in. Faith is not required in a vacuum, absent of trials and tribulations. Faith flourishes when tested. You don't know what the true capacity of your faith is until it is tested to its limits. This is going to be an ongoing theme over the summer, because the people that we're going to be looking at embody what I just shared with you. So this is how Hebrews 11:1 is written in the Complete Jewish Study Bible. Trusting or faith is being confident of what is hoped for, convinced about things we do not see. So again, let me just reiterate, confidence, translated as substance in the King James Version, is defined as a state of feeling certain about the truth of something. Another definition is it's the feeling of belief that one can rely on someone or something, in essence, firmly trusting them. And then to be convinced is translated in the King James as evidence. So evidence can be convincing. So to be convinced, completely certain about something, that it's firm in one's belief with regard to a particular cause or issue. So certain and convinced are two aspects. Certainty and being convinced, are two aspects of faith. As we read of Abraham, as conveyed by the writer of Hebrews, no one has been tested more in Scripture than Abraham himself. Now there are many aspects we can glean from Abraham's life and expand upon. It is conveyed that Abraham went through 10 tests from Adonai. That is at least 10 that have been recorded. Who knows what else he might have experienced at the hand of Adonai, but these 10 were revealed for a purpose, for us to learn from, for us to glean from in terms of establishing and therefore encouraging our faith to be tested, so to speak. So Maimonides lists them as follows. God tells him to leave his homeland to be a stranger in a land of Canaan. Immediately after his arrival in the promised land, he encounters famine. This is number 2. Number 3, the Egyptians seize his beloved wife Sarah and bring her to Pharaoh. Number 3. This is number 4. Abraham faces incredible odds in the battle of the 4 and 5 kings. He marries Hagar after not being able to have children with Sarah. That was number 5. Number 6. God tells him to circumcise himself at an advanced age. The majority of you in your room don't understand this, but trust me when I say that's a test. Number 7, the king of Gerar captures Sarah, intending to take her for himself as to be one of his wives, actually. Number 8, God tells him to send Hagar away after having a child with her. Number 9, his son Ishmael becomes estranged. And then the 10th and final is God tells Abraham to sacrifice his dear son Yitzhak. So those are what are constituted as the 10 trials or 10 tests that Adonai conveys upon Abraham. So I could spend weeks going through each one or choose one and expand upon it. Abraham was most certainly tested within the culture he resided within. The culture most certainly was a factor when dealing with the Egyptians and with King Gerar regarding Sarah. Yet much of what Abraham would be challenged by was not external, but rather internal. He, in essence, responded to the situation that was framed by the culture he resided in. At times, he didn't do well. Yet this doesn't mean because you didn't do well, you are to give up. Faith requires perseverance. Sometimes faith requires failing first in order to succeed later. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 8, the writer tells us, by trusting, Abraham obeyed after being called to go out to a place which God would give him as a possession. Indeed, he went out without knowing where he was going. The Akedah, the binding of Isaac, is certainly the most significant of Abraham's tests, in that it provides us with an image of what the Passover will ultimately do, not just for the nation, but the entire world. Yet all of this would not be possible had Abraham not taken that first step in obeying Adonai to leave his home and travel to a land he did not know, and in essence would be a foreigner there. In looking at the place where Abraham lived, was a place called Ur Kasdim. And this is where his father left in Genesis 11:31. Terach took his son Avram, his son Haran, his son Haran's son Lot, and Sarah his daughter-in-law, his son Abraham's wife, and they left Ur of the Kasdim to go to the land of Canaan. But when they came to Haran, they stayed there. We know very little about Ur of Kasdim and Haran itself in terms of the cultural dynamic. Haran, in essence, is located in today's Turkey. It's to the northeast. I'm not sure how many miles, but keeping in mind, that's where it was located or situated, and then they had to go south. Last Shabbat, I was able to provide you with an accurate account of the climate of the people at the time of Noah and what he would have to endure. There really wasn't any doubt about the culture and the climate at the time of Noah. In Genesis 6:12, God saw the earth, and yes, it was corrupt, for all living beings had corrupted their ways on the earth. So you really didn't have to put too many pieces of the puzzle together to come up with a corrupt, vile, evil, sinful environment that Noah lived in.
And more fun.
He says to him, so here at this time of Abraham, we do not have such an assessment as to the culture that he's coming out of. Yet Abraham is told to leave. Genesis 12:1. Now Adonai said to Abram, get yourself out of this country, away from your kinsmen and away from your father's house, and go to the land that I will show you. So he's being told to get away, to leave his kinsmen, his family, and more specifically, his father's home. The culture was likely that of many that we are made aware of. And ultimately that we're made aware of during Israel's wilderness journey, and that of the inhabitants of the land of Canaan. What do we experience in Canaan? Paganism, multiple gods, idol worship, sacrificing to them, etc. However, there were likely some who did not follow this practice. We read of one, a contemporary of Abraham, who feared him and was a servant to Adonai, and that is Job. We read in Job 1:1, there was a man in the land of Uz, whose name was Job. This man was blameless and upright. He feared God and shunned evil. So they lived around the same time. Their books were written around the same time. Job was a patriarch. Abraham would become a patriarch. So there's similarities between them two, making them, in essence, contemporaries. And then we read in Job 1:8, Adonai asked the adversary, "Did you notice my servant, that there is no one like him on earth, a blameless and upright man who fears God and shuns evil?" So that might mean maybe two. Who knows? At least we know of two. Yet there is very little we know of his life at this time. Talking about Avram again. His practices, yet there is one thing we can be confident of. That is, Abraham did not know Adonai at the time. He did not have a relationship with him, follow him, or worship him. However, there is one thing that we do know, and it may offer a clue. Abraham was a descendant of Shem, Noah's son, who did not dishonor his father, him along with Japhet. Could it be that he came from good stock, that is Abraham? Just as Israel's journey in the wilderness would be the means by which Adonai would reveal himself to them, and thus they would come to know all of his attributes, his 13 attributes, they would come to know all of them. They would come to know what was revealed in Exodus 34, 6 and 7, that he is merciful, compassionate, slow to anger, rich in grace and truth, showing grace to the thousandth generation, forgiving offenses, crimes, and sins, yet not exonerating the guilty, but causing the negative effect of the parents' offenses to be experienced by their children and grandchildren, and even by the third and fourth generation. Abraham would not come to know God in such a manner, but he would come to know who God was in terms of how God was revealing himself to him. So too, Abraham's journey would be an introduction to the one true God. Adonai would test him many times, as I had already alluded to, in order to refine him, prepare him for what Adonai would be calling upon him to do and thus initiate. So testing is good. It's like, no, I can't go through any more tests, God. I've already gone through enough of them. If he is testing you, he is preparing you. If he is preparing you, then he's in essence saying that he has something he wants you to do. Stephen conveys this in his testimony to the Kohen Gadol in Acts chapter 7. "Brothers and fathers, listen to me. The God of glory appeared to Avraham Avinu, Abraham our father, in Mesopotamia, before he lived in Haran, and said to him, 'Leave your land and your family, and go into the land that I will show you.' So he left the land of the Chasdim and lived in Haran. After his father died, God made him move to this land where you are living now. So we read of Terach dying in Bamidbar 11:32. It said he lived to be 205 years old. Then Adonai speaks to Abram in verse 1, and he says, 'Get yourself out of your country.' So upon his father's death, he's now, in essence, instructing him to leave and actually complete the journey that was originally intended. The Tanakh itself extols Abraham's faith. We read in Nehemiah chapter 9, verses 7 and 8. You are Adonai, the God who chose Avram, brought him out of Ur Kasdim, and gave him the name Avraham. Finding that he was faithful to you, you made a covenant with him to give the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Jebusites, and Girgashites, to give it to his descendants. And you have done what you promised because you are just. As the Shaul, quoting Bamidbar 15:6. So these are accounts that are given with regards to Abraham and his faith. In Romans chapter 4, verse 1, then what should we say of Abraham, our father, obtained by his own efforts? For if Abraham came to be considered righteous by God because of legalistic observance, that means he did it himself. Then he is something to boast about. But this is not how it is before God. For what does the Tanakh say? Abraham put his trust in God, and it was credited to his account as righteousness. So his actions led to righteousness. We talked about Zadok last week. He was just, he was righteous, he was lawful, he was obedient, in other words. Then you have what Shaul writes in Galatians chapter 3, verse 6 through 8. It was the same with Abraham. He trusted in God and was faithful to him. And that was credited to his account as righteousness. Be assured then that it is those who live by trusting and being faithful who are really children of Abraham. Also, the Tanakh, foreseeing that God would consider the Gentiles righteous when they live by trusting and being faithful, told the good news to Abraham in advance by saying, in connection with you, all the nations will be blessed. What is this but a hidden aspect of the gospel? Out of Israel will come a Savior, and all the nations will ultimately be blessed. And this ultimately comes from Genesis 12:3. I will bless those who bless you, but I will curse anyone who curses you, and by you all the families of the earth will be blessed. Adonai lays out the instruction he is giving to Abraham, and yet it is one action that is required in order for all of this to occur. We find it in verse 4. Three simple words. So, Abraham went. That was the domino that made every other domino fall according to God's plan. We read of Abraham because of a step he took. He had very little information. He posed no questions that are recorded after Adonai had spoken to him. He wasn't even given a map or a destination. He was just told, go, and he went. On the journey, Adonai would reveal more to Abraham. But only after he went, only after he left the land he was living in, only after he left his kinsmen and his father's house. Okay, God, I'll leave, but you've got to give me a triptych. You've got to put my itinerary in writing for me so that I will determine if I'm going to go or not. There was no AAA then, there was no triptychs then. We will not always know everything we need to know. However, so long as we trust in Him, remain faithful to Him, He will show us more. I can testify to His Word. He did not show us before we left Western New York what the congregation would look like or who would be here. He didn't give us faces. He didn't give us names. He said, okay, come to Maine, knock on these doors, and tell them you're here. If it was only that easy, then we would have said, oh, I'm not knocking on strange doors. Anyways, never mind. We tend to question what we're supposed to do. We first had to go, and upon that action, Adonai would show us more. With each step we took, He would show us more. With each Shabbat we celebrated or recognized, there was another one to come. When there was another one, there might be another person, or two, or three. So He doesn't show you everything up front. Wouldn't that be easy? Okay, I know He's doing all these things, so yeah, I'll go. Yet faith is not knowing, but doing anyways. So the writer of Hebrews devotes more space to Abraham than to anyone else, giving no less than four instances of his trusting. So in a chapter that in essence is the Mount Rushmore of faith, Abraham is taking up a good chunk of the mountain. Basically, the writer of Hebrews talks about his obeying God's call to leave home for an unknown land. That's what we're talking about now. His steadfast hoping for the unseen heavenly city. His trusting God to provide an heir through Sarah despite its natural impossibility. You try having a child when you're 99. Let me know how that works out for you. And then finally, his offering that heir, his heir as a sacrifice. So these are the four things that the writer of Hebrews emphasizes when he's talking about Abraham. We read further on of what would be made known as Abraham upon taking action and thus responding to Adonai. So upon taking that step, it says, he lived as a temporary resident in the land of the promise. Think of it this way. You own your own home, yet you live in it as a tenant. This land was promised to Abraham, yet he is a stranger living in the land. And then the writer goes on, as if it were not his, staying in tents with Yitzhak and Yaakov, who were to receive what was promised along with him. So here you have three generations living in the land that belongs to them, promise of Adonai, but they are in essence strangers in that land. They do not control the land itself. They are not sovereign over the land, but other nations, other people are. And then verse 10, for he was looking forward to the city with permanent foundations, of which the architect and builder is God. So this imagery of the temporary status, in essence, the writer of Hebrews is saying he's looking to permanently be his heirs, that the promise will come to its fruition. The writer of Hebrews conveys that Abraham was looking forward to the promise as conveyed by Adonai. There is so much that is concentrated in these three verses of Bamidbar that when unpacked, of Hebrews, that when unpacked, brings forth a flood of promise and understanding. I would say Abraham could not have comprehended all that would transpire when he responded to a simple command, go. That he would be so instrumental in Adonai's plan for redeeming his creation. Yet there are times when we know there is something much bigger, but just can't envision what it is to look like. So this promise, was this promise fulfilled? Yeshua testified that Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov are still alive. Therefore, if they're still alive, then the promise is fulfilled, because this is how he frames it. And as for whether the dead are resurrected, haven't you read what God said to you? I am the God of Abraham, the God of Yitzhak, the God of Yaakov. He is the God not of the dead, but of the living. So the promise that he made is in essence a promise that is fulfilled and continues in its fulfillment. I believe Shaul conveys Abraham's initial action and thus our lives of faith as follows. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, starting in verse 1. We know that when the tent which houses us here on earth is torn down, we have a permanent building from God, a building not made by human hands to house us in heaven. For in this tent, our earthly body, we groan with desire to have around us the home from heaven that will be ours. With this around us, we will not be found naked. Yes, while we are in this body, we groan with the sense of being oppressed. It is not so much that we want to take something off, but rather to put something on over it, so that what must die may be swallowed up by the life. Moreover, it is God who has prepared us for this very thing, and as a pledge he has given us his Spirit. So we are always confident. We know that so long as we are at home in the body, we are away from our home with the Lord. For we live by trust, not by what we see. We are confident then, and would much prefer to leave our home in the body and come to our home with the Lord. Therefore, whether at home or away from home, we try our utmost to please him. For we must all appear before Messiah's court of judgment, where everyone will receive the good or bad consequences of what he did while he was in his body. So Abraham communicated directly with Adonai. Today we have the essence of his presence residing within us. So Adonai is not walking alongside us, but is doing so through us. You who believe in him today have done so through accepting his Son. Thus we yearn for and thus desire what cannot be seen by the naked eye, yet hope for, just as Abraham hoped for as well. The very definition of faith again. He ultimately became confident of what was hoped for. He did not see it, but the promise was there. And ultimately he was convinced about things that he did not see that would be seen later. And for us, we haven't seen them yet, but we will see them later. So Abraham could have walked away from God at any point in time. He could have walked away at the ninth trial, the ninth test. I'm done. I can't do this anymore. How many of you have had such a battle with yourself? I can't do this anymore. Yet what would have happened if you walked away just before God revealed something so miraculous to you? That a tenth trial would in essence be the predicate, or one of the earlier predicates that would lead to Passover. What if you missed your Passover because it was too hard the nine times before? So I want you to keep this in mind as we continue, that faith requires endurance. Abraham endured at least 10 trials. Maybe each trial was the equivalent of a marathon. So he ran 10 marathons. So I want you to keep this in mind as we continue looking at those who came before us, those who persevered, those who did not succumb but overcame. So if everybody would please rise.